This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley. This month, we're celebrating 20 years of Fresh Air as a national daily broadcast by listening back to excerpts from our first year. Our next interview, flashing back to 1987, is with anthropologist and professor Robert Murphy, who died in 1990. In 1972, his body began to twinge with muscle spasms that wouldn't go away. Eventually, doctors discovered a debilitating tumor growing on his spinal cord. Murphy was a professor of anthropology at Columbia University at the time his illness first appeared. As his condition worsened, his interest in the social and cultural consequences of paralysis deepened. He became the subject of his own field research and found that he belonged to a subculture that was socially isolated and feared by others. From the perspective of an anthropologist, Murphy wrote a book exploring the uneasy relations between the able-bodied and the disabled. It was called The Body Silent. Terry spoke to Robert Murphy when that book was published in 1987 and asked him about his condition at the time. He told her he had some movement and use of his arms, but was paralyzed from the waist down.
Since you can't really control your legs and have just a little bit of control over your arms, do you still feel like the owner of your body? Do you have a different relationship with your body than you used to?
My body is now something about which I'm self-conscious. I am aware of my body, I'm aware of its deficiencies, and I'm aware all of the time. And you don't get totally disembodied. There are times when one does get disembodied, one would wish to become disembodied, but I think that the problem mostly is you maintain a sense of body simply because it is such a problem at all times. But the body does become alien to you. It becomes a very faulty instrument on which your head is sitting.
So you think of your body as a problem?
It is a problem. It is a desperate problem. And there are times when one feels almost a sense of imprisonment. Every now and then, I get slight attacks of claustrophobia, of being locked inside a body that won't move. There's something else that goes with it, too. And I've tried to write of that. It is a very difficult thing to write about, though. And this is the fact that I can no longer dissolve my thoughts into movement. We do not realize the extent to which our thought processes are all tied up with various physical things we do. Our thinking is just as much a matter of speaking, arm movements and so on. All of these things enter into it. And there are times when we escape thought almost altogether by losing ourselves in movement. I live a life that is, to a remarkable degree, contemplative and meditative. And I was never a terribly contemplative or meditative person before, but in a way that I never experienced earlier, I spend a lot of time doing nothing else but thinking for long, long periods of time. And I suppose this was the genesis of the book.
A lot of people see paraplegics as asexual. Has that changed your relationship with women because you're not going to be perceived as having sexual interest in them?
Yeah. For one thing, I think it goes beyond sexuality and asexuality and goes into a very fundamental kind of relationship between males and females. Only after I got in a wheelchair did I find out how deeply women have been socialized to be resistant and to be on guard with men. Now, I think that right now, for example, I found out this early in my time in a wheelchair, that women I didn't know would talk to me. They would smile at me. I would get in the elevator. They would strike up a conversation. These were things that ordinarily no woman ever did before. And I sort of have enjoyed women more myself.
That's very interesting.
That at last I can talk to people of the opposite sex without there being somehow or other a worry in the back of each of our minds about what we're going to say. I can even talk to them about sex, and it doesn't arouse any anxieties.
Have you ever asked, why me?
No, I haven't. I think that's a useless question, because there you are trying to impute some absolute meaning to the universe. Why me is absolutely immaterial. I look upon this as total caprice and without any ultimate meaning, and I don't think that God is trying to punish me or do anything else, and nor do I think that any deity is going to cure me. So, no, it's been a very secular experience for me.
You know, in a strange way, do you think maybe you've found your calling by studying the handicapped from an anthropologist's perspective? I just don't think any book has ever been written like yours, exploring what it feels like, both mentally and physically, to be handicapped.
You know, it is almost eerie. I started off my career very early as a student of large-scale structures and the evolution of society in general, all the way from primitive hunters and gatherers right on up to modern civilization. Somewhere in middle life, I didn't give up on that. I just became disinterested, and I became more concerned with the kinds of interactions that go on with people. Then that became a little bit stale, and I realized that what I had to do was find out what is the hardcore I that does the interacting. I always thought that if I ever was going to do this, how would I go about getting the research material? Then all of a sudden this happened to me, and the research material is now here. It is in me, it's growing on me, and fundamentally I found it was the direction of all of my research. And yeah, I now am asking the basic questions of what is the nature of being oneself, and what is the nature of basic relationships with other human beings. And it's been this has been the most fascinating part of the entire venture. It hasn't made it worthwhile. I do wish that somebody else had written this book.
Robert Murphy, I want to thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Robert Murphy, speaking to Terry Gross in 1987. He died in 1990.